Thanks for downloading the podcast. Be sure to like the Polite Politics community fan page on Facebook and be sure to tell your friends. Welcome into the Polite Politics podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Page. On the show today, we're going to talk about the state of the Republican Party. But before we do that, did get some feedback last week. I have promised that if people made good points, even if I disagreed with them, that I would give them on the air. One message I did receive from a friend who has dealt with some Freedom of Information Act issues, he felt like the number of classified emails from Hillary Clinton and that number just increased over 600 this week. It could be misleading because there are a lot of things that are listed as classified, even though they're public information, they're available through other sources. That could be true. That's where the FBI is investigating. In my mind, the question's going to come down to, was that information private or not? In my mind, it's pretty clear that satellite photos of North Korea from the NSA are out of bounds, but to me, that's gross negligence. But I'm going to leave it to career prosecutors to make a decision on that. Although I think they should detail their rationale to the public so that they can see it and make a decision. But with that said, let's go ahead and move on to the state of the Republican Party. This week saw two major news events that I think are related to this, and that's why I'm going to address it this week, and that is Paul Ryan was elected the new Speaker of the House of Representatives. They had revolted against John Boehner. John Boehner had retired, had announced he was going to retire, moved on. Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney's running mate in 2012, and former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. He's known kind of as a wonk for budget issues. Is the new Speaker of the House. He was made the Speaker this week, and we had a Republican debate. So I want to talk a little bit about the dynamics of the Republican Party, what we're seeing in the Republican Party, and hopefully that can be something that can be useful to you as we talk about the context of some of these things. The state of the Republican Party is pretty straightforward. It's not very unified. And it's not very unified because grassroots conservatives, the so-called Tea Party, have felt like this is a group of people who've existed since 2010, but they feel like they've been compromising for decades on topic after topic, only for their provisions never to come to pass. Spending cuts are scheduled years out and then evaporate, never happen. Government continues to grow, even under presidents named Reagan and Bush. Now, part of this has its roots in the broad post-World War II compromise that is kind of falling away. In the post-World War II era, the United States seemed to come to the conclusion that the rigid, pure free market laissez-faire approach of the early 1900s wasn't going to come back, and that the pretty hardcore socialism of the 1930s wasn't really going to come back either. But instead, that we would see a compromise in which we had a free market system with some regulation and a safety net, a social safety net, that was available for those who needed it, but it was not going to be like a European-style welfare state. But here's the thing. Everybody could compromise because the economy was growing on average about 4% per year, plus, and it did so through the 1950s and the 1960s, but that number's been going down. And since the year 2000, we haven't seen above 5% growth ever in any quarter, and it's staying below 4 for almost all of that time. So we're now 15, 16 years where we're not seeing the growth we used to see. And the result is that people are restless, and you hear politicians in both parties talk about leaving a worse America for their children. So what do people do? They run to their ideologies, because their ideologies are how they think we solve the problem. Conservatives think that less government and more free markets solve the problem. Democrats think more government and less free markets solve the problem. And they've been willing to compromise in past decades because, hey, whatever we had, it was doing just fine. There was plenty of opportunities. And with that declining, now both sides are running to the extremes. And that's allowed extremists to become more powerful and more popular. That's how Bernie Sanders is popular. That's how Ted Cruz is popular. Ted Cruz is pretty extreme on the Republican side. Bernie Sanders, pretty extreme on the Democrat side. And yet both are orthodoxy for huge portions of their political parties. Why? Because people aren't willing to compromise, because they see the world going down the wrong hole, and so they're less willing to compromise. Now, this is manifesting itself in the Republican Party in two places. Really three, but we're going to talk about two today. And that is, first, the House of Representatives, and second, the presidential primary. In the House of Representatives, John Boehner was the Speaker of the House. He was kind of a manager, and he just tried to keep things going. But he had a wing of the Republican Party that was sick of dealing with him. It was called the House Freedom Caucus. This was the ultra-Tea Partiers. And as a result of their revolts against him, they were denied plum positions in the House. Remember, as we've talked before, the real power from being in the House of Representatives is in your panels and the committees that you get to sit on. And none of them were sitting on the House Ways and Means Committee, which is really powerful and oversees the budget. None of them were sitting on other things. And Boehner was behind the scenes rewarding, just as most speakers have, rewarding people who were a little more faithful to him. But that group that disagreed with him and who thought that they weren't confrontational enough with President Obama was getting stronger and stronger. And so John Boehner finally said, "I'm done with it, I'm leaving." And so in the House of Representatives, they were looking for a new speaker, and guess what? Nobody could get there, because more centrist members of Congress were like, "I don't want that job." More conservative members of Congress couldn't get the support of enough centrist members, and a lot of names got floated. I thought Mitt Romney was actually an interesting one that got floated. You don't have to be a member of the House to be Speaker of the House. But Paul Ryan eventually said, "You know what, I'll do this." Now, he still has some ground to gain, because 9 Republicans voted against him for Speaker. It's not entirely surprising. It was a little disappointing. I think he has a chance to do a good job, because he is talking like he's going to do things differently than previous leaders. One of my personal biggest gripes about our politicians today is they spend a lot less time trying to persuade the American public of something, and a lot more time trying to make it sound like they agree with the public when they really don't. You've seen this with President Obama, whose presidency has looked nothing like his campaigns. You've seen it with most other candidates on a variety of issues. The Republicans running for Congress ran on this real confrontational approach to President Obama, and what have they done? They've pretty much backed off. So you're seeing people getting frustrated there. Paul Ryan talks about communicating a positive vision, which I think is a good thing for all of us, and then people can look at and see, do I like this vision or not, and choose between sides. Now, what remains to be seen is whether the House Freedom Caucus, that more extreme group, and others on the extreme right are serious about reforming the Republican Party and trying to work as part of a team, or if they just look for things to gripe about because that makes them stronger. We'll see what happens, but that's where that is. On the presidential side, I want to give you a preview of what I think is happening in our presidential politics, what's happening in the debates, and give you an idea of where this is going. The debate on Wednesday did a lot to clarify things. There are officially 14 candidates still in the running by my count, and yet there are really only 6 or 7 who have a chance of being nominated and or elected. So I'm going to group these together and kind of give you my thoughts on how this is going to go, which candidates are there. So the first group of candidates is 2 candidates. We're going to call it the dropped-out category. These are candidates who had a lot of promise but dropped out. And those are Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, and Scott Walker, current governor of Wisconsin. You know, these two men both came in with high hopes. Rick Perry actually has spent the last few years really brushing up and improving his credentials. He has really worked on understanding the issues. But with so many candidates in the field, neither was able to get as much penetration as they needed to, and this was really problematic because both built huge campaign apparatuses with way too many people, and so they ran out of money. As a result, both have dropped out of the race. There are two unknowns who I see having no chance to get there. Jim Gilmore, who's the former governor of the state of Virginia. He has no name recognition. He lost a Senate race. And George Pataki, the former governor of New York. Once again, he has some name recognition, but he's not moving the register in any way. Next group is four candidates that I'll call the never had a chance group. And these four never really had a chance. The first is Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is senator who is a war hawk. He's very, very pro-military spending. And I don't know that that was ever a huge fit in the Republican Party. And he just rubs a lot of people the wrong way. He handles things in a really bad way. Jon Stewart is always mocking him. And he's not particularly well-liked. Bobby Jindal, who is the governor of Louisiana, is a wonk and from a very young age has been involved at very high levels of politics, a very, very smart man. But he's flopped on the national stage a few times, and now he's become deeply unpopular in Louisiana. And as a result, he tried to run to the extreme right on social issues to try and win things back, and that's just disqualified him. He has no chance. Next to him are two other candidates who also have run far to the right. I think it's a little more authentically who they are. But in a country that has, over the last 8 years, become much more tolerant of gays and lesbians, these two have kind of built their campaigns on trying to fight culture wars. First is Rick Santorum. Actually, they're the winners of the Iowa caucuses the last two election cycles. Rick Santorum won in 2012, barely beat Mitt Romney, although that only came out a few weeks later. The country's moves left on his biggest issues, and otherwise, he's just really pandering, and honestly, not a lot of people really have a lot of respect for him. Mike Huckabee, I've debated whether to say it this way. But I see him as a lesser version of Donald Trump. He gives the populist banter, he talks a lot about it, but he's not willing to go as far as Trump is on things, and as a result, he just is not going to get traction. They're on their way out. So that leaves us with nine candidates who had a chance. And of those nine candidates, three have had poor strategies that have crushed their campaigns. Poor strategies or circumstances, I should say, that have killed their chances. So I'll give those three real quick, and then we can talk about the six candidates that really are likely to square off in this final thing. First, Chris Christie. Chris Christie had a lot of promise. He'd done really well in New Jersey. As a Republican, succeeding in New Jersey, not easy to do. He'd taken on teachers' unions and won. He ran into a few problems. The first was the closing of the bridge, so-called Bridgegate, really looked like it could be an ugly thing. Now, he's been exonerated, but it looked like it could be a really ugly thing. Second thing is because he was governor of the state of New Jersey, he was ineligible to raise federal money for a federal campaign from anyone in the state of New Jersey, and that really foreclosed a lot of Wall Street donors from potentially donating to his campaign. His brash mentality, he nominated some liberals, and in a Republican Party that is running a little more to the right, the things he had to do to be a governor of the state of New Jersey wouldn't have played as well. Next, Rand Paul. I thought Rand had a really good chance in this field because his dad, Ron, had such a powerful following among libertarians. And the question to me was always going to be, could the hardcore Ron Paul libertarian folks people who were okay with Ron saying things about how 9/11 was a conspiracy from our government and blaming us for September 11th, and his extreme libertarianism. If Rand, his son, who is a much more gentle libertarian, would not endorse some of those more extreme views, but is still somewhat libertarian, would he be able to take his father's base? And the answer is no. We've seen that his father's base just has not embraced him. They see him as compromising too much. And as a result, he hasn't had that built-in base of supporters that could have sustained him long enough to give him a platform to really have these discussions. And so he's kind of faded. Now, I should say both Chris Christie and Rand Paul are both really young. I think both of these men have opportunities in the future. And that may be true of Bobby Jindal as well. If he's a really young man as well, he has a chance. John Kasich is the last one. I think John Kasich actually had a good resume and some good opportunities. But he's tried to... Well, John Huntsman Jr., who, because we're syndicated on a website in Utah, I won't give you all of my thoughts on John Huntsman Jr., but I will say this. John Huntsman Jr.'s campaign plan in 2012 was to be the candidate for Republicans who hate the Republican Party and who hate conservatives. And he hired a staff who was oriented around bashing Republicans and Republican principles everywhere they could. And as you can imagine, that probably didn't work so well. It's kind of like when Jim Webb was running for president in the Democratic primary. Nobody could kind of figure out what was going on. That was kind of what John Huntsman Jr. did. And he failed miserably. I mean, he wasn't even liked in his home state. John Kasich has, to some degree, the same problem because he hired John Huntsman Jr.'s staff. And he hired people who really want to go that way and push that kind of narrative, and it's just not going to work in a Republican primary. Now, do I think that John Kasich could have been a good candidate? Absolutely. And I think he could have been a good president. Yeah, I actually do. But if his views are that he's just hostile to the Republican Party, then he shouldn't have run in a Republican primary. And my guess is that he didn't hold those views, but that he just strategically calculated that that was how he wanted to approach it, and that may be the case with John Huntsman Jr., although my guess is that John Huntsman Jr.'s views were much more hostile to the Republican Party than John Kasich's. But we'll see. In any case, John Kasich, huge strategic mistake, and put himself in a situation where he was never going to get a chance. So that leaves us with six candidates who potentially have a chance to be the Republican nominee for president. Number one. And I'm going to go kind of, these are no particular order. I've labeled these out. There are three that are current office holders, current or former office holders, and there are three that are outsiders. The current office holders, or current or former office holders, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. He is extremely conservative, very Tea Party wing of the party, very popular in that wing. Senator Marco Rubio. Throughout the race, he's been everybody's second favorite candidate. He's one of the few that has the ability to appeal to both the kind of the more Tea Party folks who are on the extreme right and the establishment folks who are on the moderate side of things. He kind of appeals to both, and so has been an interesting candidate. Governor Jeb Bush, he has a great resume and the wrong last name. Now, his last name allowed him to squeeze out Chris Christie early and Scott Walker as well, and Rick Perry, chasing away those candidates. But the donations are starting to dry up, and he's seeing a cash crunch. And his family's fundraising network, which is prolific, seems to be tapped out to some degree. Now the three outsiders. You have Carly Fiorina, former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. Ben Carson, who's a retired neurosurgeon. And Donald Trump, who is, I don't even know what to call Donald Trump. Everybody who hears this podcast knows who I'm talking about. So I'm not even going to try to add a moniker to him. So with these six candidates, you really see this is kind of who's really left. All the other candidates are going to fade out here over the next few weeks, months, may go into Iowa. Now, remember, the way a presidential primary works is that different states hold them at different times. And what that allows for is rather than one big national election, instead we get a longer vetting process of the candidates. We get to know the candidates and see them in different environments and watch them go. And as people are looking at this, I have a pretty strong theory about how I think this is going to go. At some point, the so-called Tea Party wing and the so-called establishment wing are going to coalesce around candidates. And they're going to pick from among those candidates kind of the best candidate. And that will probably end up manifesting itself by Iowa and New Hampshire, who those candidates are. And the best candidate or two are going to emerge from each of those. And then we're going to be down to a one or two, or we'll be down to a 2 to 3 candidate race. And at the point where we're at a 2 to 3 candidate race, then we'll see how it goes. And I think it'll be pretty predictable. So in my view, how does this go? Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, and Ben Carson are really fighting it out against one another for the Tea Party anti-establishment wing. And this is a group of people who have really strong reservations about the Republicans in Congress, who think they're too moderate, and are representing a very conservative wing of the party. The winner of this, by the way, I think will win the Iowa caucuses. One of these three will win the Iowa caucuses. Then there's the more establishment-y wing. And that's where you see Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush. And I think the winner of this will probably win New Hampshire. One of these two men, I think, will win New Hampshire, which is the second state. Iowa goes first with their caucuses, and then New Hampshire has their primary. Now, you'll notice I didn't mention someone, and that's Carly Fiorina. I think she's a wild card. She fits in both places. To some degree, she doesn't have the quote-unquote experience, but she did run a major corporation. I don't know how she plays out. Here's what I do know. There are a lot of women in my life who are passionate for Carly Fiorina, who have been inspired by her standing up to Donald Trump's sexist remarks, who've been inspired by her handling of media sexism, and who are cheering for her. I think there could be a faction there. She could either completely fade and just not be a part of this at all, or she could really play a huge role. And I'm not sure which it's going to be. But with that said, my guess is that this probably comes down to Marco Rubio and either Donald Trump or Ben Carson. Conventional wisdom is that Donald Trump and Ben Carson's people will just go to Ted Cruz. I don't think that's true. I think Ben Carson's people will go more to Rubio, because Rubio's not like your truly establishment-y guy. Like, he fits the establishment, but he appeals to both sides. My prediction, and I could be completely wrong, this is entirely dependent, I'm going to give one condition. If there is something in Marco Rubio's history that sinks him, there could be something in his past that becomes an issue. But if there isn't, I think Marco Rubio is going to win the Republican nomination. I'm trying not to overreact from what we're seeing. He just has the broadest appeal. So, and we saw in the debate, Marco Rubio just crushed Jeb Bush. Now, we'll see if Jeb's able to come from behind. But my guess is the baggage with his last name are going to make that hard. I could be wrong, but that's my guess. What we're seeing right now is that Bush is probably in a tough spot. And so that means when he drops out, and by the way, my guess is that Jeb Bush is going to drop out sooner rather than later. He does not behave like somebody who really wants to be president. He does not. He's made comments to that effect. And I don't know how hard he's going to go after Rubio once he realizes he can't win. My guess is that he jumps out, and you see Rubio, his people will all coalesce around Rubio. And then you see his people and Rubio's people the Trump, Carson, Cruz, Fiorina, these are all going into Iowa. And it's very possible that after Iowa and New Hampshire, only one, maybe two of them will be left of those four. And I think Rubio will be standing, and one or two of those four will be standing, and I think people will start to coalesce around Rubio. I could be completely wrong, but I'm going on the record here saying that's how I think this plays out. I think the one person I don't think will be the nominee of this group, I don't think Donald Trump will be the nominee. I think he's too controversial. I think there are too many people who will say anybody but him. I actually don't think Ted Cruz will be either. Of these, the ones I actually think could be the nominee for Republican president, Ben Carson, who I think is really well-liked, really respected, is getting better in the debates and different things, and could be really good, Marco Rubio, and Carly Fiorina. These are the three that I think you really need to keep your eye on. When I was asked privately over the summer at my wedding and other places, who do I think it's going to be, I said Marco Rubio and Scott Walker are the two to watch. Scott Walker, unfortunately, spent himself crazy for reasons that make no sense to me, and so has been out of the race. But Marco Rubio strikes me as my prediction. Now, if there's something in his closet, some skeleton that comes out, we could see him fade. But my guess is that he's the real deal. So there you have it, my pick for how this Republican primary process is going to go, and hopefully a good feel for who the candidates are and how they're staging things. I'd love to hear who you think is going to win the nomination or who you'd like to win the nomination. So reach out to me. You can comment on Polite Politics. That's the Facebook fan group or fan page, Polite Politics. Please join the group. Please come in and vote who you think will win the Republican nomination, who you think is going to win the nomination. And be sure to reach out to me via my email if you have questions, comments, thoughts. Would love to hear from you. Thanks so much. Have a great week. Hey, everyone. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Do you disagree with something I said? You're probably not alone. Shoot me an email at tpage@politepolitics.com, and if you make a good point, I'll read it on the air.